And welcome to Innovation on Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, broadcasting from the studios at the University of Sioux Falls. And coming up on the program, we're going to hear about Native American health, and we're going to also talk about some fun science festivals happening in the eastern side of the state. But first, we're going to start out west, and joining me now is Josh Wilhite. He's the project manager for the Long Baseline Neutrino Facility. Josh, thanks for being with us today on Innovation.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And also Jarrett Heiss, he's a science director at the Sanford Underground Lab at Homestake. Jarrett, thanks for joining us as well.
Oh, you're most welcome.
So, Josh, let's start with you and have you explain the Long Baseline Neutrino Facility and what it is and what it's going to do.
So the Long Baseline Neutrino Facility is part of a large project that's being organized out of Fermilab in Batavia, Illinois, near Chicago. And it's studying the conversion of neutrinos from one type to another as they pass from an accelerator in Batavia at Fermilab to Leeds, South Dakota here. We're in a sweet spot of distance from that accelerator to study this process where neutrinos actually change the type they are. I'm responsible for the engineering design, so if you have physics questions, you should talk to Jarrett.
Okay. Well, how does that work then, Jarrett?
Well, compared to the normal particles that we know and love, electrons, quarks, making neutrons, protons, and stars and planets and galaxies, neutrinos are the most strange, mysterious particles we've ever seen. There's a number of properties about them that might explain some of the most important questions we have about the universe. Why do we exist? Why is there more matter in the universe than antimatter? Everywhere we look, we see matter. We don't understand why the neutrino mass is so small. It's about a million times smaller than all of the other than the other lightest charged particles, the electron, for instance. And so a lot of those mysteries may well be wrapped up in the neutrino. The neutrino itself is like a soup made up of a number of different components, and those components are traveling at slightly different speeds, and so you can imagine quantum mechanically they interfere, and that allows them to change from one type to another, and that's this really bizarre property. Another one of the very bizarre properties that the DUNE experiment, the Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment at the LBNF here in South Dakota, is hoping to study.
Okay, so what kind of, I mean, it's my understanding that you need to create a huge space for this experiment. Is that right, Josh?
Yeah, so it's, for an underground excavation, it's not unprecedented, but it's very close. So we're talking about caverns that are approximately 1 mile underground within the former Homestake gold mine. And these caverns are going to be, there's two detector caverns. Each detector cavern houses two detectors each, so there's four total detectors. Each of those detectors holds 10,000 tons of liquid argon. And to fit those in, that amount is, we need caverns that are about 60 feet wide and 500 feet long and 90 feet tall. So these are gigantic underground excavations that we're creating to house these detectors.
And so part of the environmental impact is getting that rock out of there, right?
Right. So as you can imagine, the underground facility here was pretty large for mining, but not large enough to hold the amount of rock that we're trying to excavate. And so using the same systems that were used during the gold mining days, we would remove that rock to surface and we would actually transport that off-site. And we've got a couple of different options for where we would dispose of that within existing excavations that would actually help in some ways towards reclamation of those existing openings on surface.
Now, what is the environmental concern with this rock?
The rock itself is actually it's pretty good rock from an environmental perspective. It's not acid generating. This is a big concern with some rocks in the Black Hills area, for example, and in fact it has some neutralizing properties. So that's a benefit. Really, the biggest impact, you know, and it's not a huge impact, is the temporary impact of actually having to transport this rock. So we're delivering it to surface, we're putting it in trucks, and then we're driving those trucks to the disposal site. And so that's going to have a disruption to the community, and there's noise and emissions that you have to deal with. But those are, you know, very, very similar to historic disruptions and trucking of logging is an industry that creates almost the same amount of trucks. But that's really what we're looking at. That's what the public will see. As you can imagine, the detectors are being built a mile underground. The public's not going to see much of the rest of the project, but really the trucking of that rock is kind of what the public's exposed to.
And how far away are you moving the rock?
We've got a couple of options. One is actually the original home stake open cut, which is not too far away, but to truck it there, it's about 5 miles. The other option is a previous gold mine that's near lead. It's called Gilt Edge, and that's about 7 miles away. So not an extraordinary distance and over highways that are designed for trucking. But it's enough distance, as I say, that the public would have some impact from that.
Garrett, talk to me a little bit about, or Jarrett, I'm sorry, talk to me a little bit about what we're going to learn and why we need to know these things from this experiment.
Sure. So I mentioned some of the interesting properties of neutrinos. Understanding how our universe works is ultimately the goal of this experiment. These have been long outstanding problems that have accumulated in particle physics, and as we need better and better sensitivities to understand these properties, you have to get to the sizes that Josh was describing with these gigantic underground cavities with a total of more than 40,000 tons of liquid argon. And so the matter-antimatter asymmetry will help us understand what we observe in the current universe with the predominance of matter over antimatter, and help us understand what may have been occurring in the early universe to support that. Also understanding the mass of the neutrinos. The neutrino was invented in the 1930s. It was discovered in the 1950s, and we still today don't know how much a neutrino weighs. And there could be some fundamental reason for that that would give us a better appreciation, would fill out our understanding of physics even more. We learned about the Higgs mechanism from the Large Hadron Collider a few years ago. That made a really big splash. It was very important to the standard model of particle physics. And the neutrino, as it is right now, doesn't quite fit into that standard model, and that's exciting in itself. It's learning and forcing us to come up with new physics. That Higgs mechanism may or may not be the same mechanism that gives the neutrino its mass. And if it isn't, well, that's also really interesting. And so in large part, it's better understanding how our universe works. There are also potentially a few applications for neutrinos. Given that they interact with nature so rarely, they're very, very hard to detect. But there could be some practical applications in terms of non-proliferation, monitoring for nuclear materials, that sort of thing. The detector technology that Dune and other projects are developing may be brought to bear for those types of activities that are really important to society.
And how are you going to know that the neutrinos that you're looking at are actually the ones that come from Chicago?
That's a good question. The neutrino flux and energies from that accelerator will be slightly different than the ones that are normally produced, say, naturally, either in our closest star, the Sun, or in interactions in the upper atmosphere. There aren't a lot of nuclear reactors around our site, and that would be another man-made source of neutrinos. And so we're in a relatively quiet area. And like I said, the other natural sources will have a different signature And actually, we won't see those at the rate that we will from the accelerator beam coming from Chicago.
So you can man-made, you can make, you can create neutrinos.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mentioned nuclear reactors, and that was actually how they were discovered in the 1950s.
Huh.
What Fermilab is doing is you could also consider that man-made. They have an accelerator beam of protons, charged particles that you can steer, and in their case, they're going to steer those protons to aim towards South Dakota, and then there's a collision that happens that ultimately has those protons colliding with a target, producing pions which then decay to neutrinos. And so that's how you can actually point a beam of neutrinos that aren't charged and interact very rarely to wherever you want it.
So it can't get lost under there?
No, they're not going to get lost. our accelerator friends at Fermilab will do a good job making sure they get pointed in the right direction. they interact so rarely that almost essentially all of the neutrinos produced in Chicago will make it here. They see the Earth as almost completely open space. They will lose very few of them.
Okay. So then what kinds of feedback are you looking for, Josh, from the public?
Well, we really want to understand what concerns the public may have with this experiment. You know, we talked about the waste rock handling. That's certainly going to have some influence on the community. There's other elements that could have some influence on the community, such as the economic impact. We're building these large detectors and spending a lot of money, and you know, if there's comments, feedback on that, you know, we're just looking for anything that the community, the public, may have concerns about, so that we can address those concerns when we do the final environmental assessment and make sure that assessment captures any potential concerns that the public may have and that we've adequately addressed those in the design as much as we can.
And how long of a process is it going to, how long is it going to take to build this?
To build the experiment is there's many ways to answer that question.
Okay,
So the excavation, the main part,
right,
that the public's really gonna see is on the order of two to four years, depending on exactly what approach we have and how the funding comes in. The funding profile from the Department of Energy in some ways dictates how much we can do in a given year. And then the experiment comes in, and it's really going to depend on how successful they are with the first detector. So they'll build one of the four detectors, and they'll get that operating. And depending on how successful that process goes and how many bugs they have to work out, they'll go into the next one. So this could be, you know, over the course of perhaps a decade before it's fully operational, and then it operates beyond that for, you know, 2 to 3 decades. And so it's a long process overall. The part that I'm mostly responsible for, the construction of the facility itself, is only a few years.
But you've been, I mean, maybe not you specifically, but the lab has been preparing for this by getting the shafts ready and those kinds of things?
Absolutely.
To haul the rock?
And we've had a great amount of support from the state of South Dakota and of course, our the private donations of T. Denny Sanford, for whom the facility's named after, has really gotten us into a great position to prepare for LBNF, but also for other potential experiments that can come to the facility. And the biggest example of that is we've got two shafts that access the underground right now, and one of those is named Ross Shaft. And that Ross Shaft is a little over halfway done, actually going in and removing all the steel that was installed in the 1930s and putting in beautiful new steel that'll make sure that we've got a nice, reliable, safe shaft for the construction of LBNF.
And so you're going, so the public meetings, why don't you run through when those are and where they're at?
So the public meetings, there will be two of them in South Dakota, and those will be, I have to look at my calendar here. Sorry about that. We've got
That's
June 17th at 6:30. PM starting in at Lead, South Dakota, and then at 6:30 on June 18th, the next day, which would be Thursday, those will be in Rapid City. And I apologize, I was not prepared with the venues.
I have a list, and we will get those posted on our website as well.
Perfect.
With this interview. And Jarrett, give me any other exciting science things happening there at the lab?
Sure. We have our existing experiments underground, the LUX experiment looking for dark matter, another elusive particle that will help us understand the universe. They are in the midst of a long, their long 300-day run, and so they're watching for WIMPs coming in and interacting with the xenon inside their detector. The Majorana Demonstrator Project is also looking to shed light on neutrinos. They are constructing their experiment using germanium, a very special type of germanium called germanium-76, a special isotope. And they have made some really good progress and are poised to collect data here very shortly from that instrument. Another expansion is going on over near the Ross, close to where the LBNF cavities will be excavated. We're using existing cavities to expand and provide laboratory space for a Black Hill State underground campus. This will be a clean room and laboratory space for multidisciplinary research. The main use will be for a number of low background assay detectors. These are really important for the future experiments. We need to know what the intrinsic radioactivity is for all the parts and pieces. All the nuts and bolts and sensors need to be characterized before they go into the construction of an experiment. The other shaft, the other cavity over at the base of the Ross shaft, as part of this expansion, will be for the Casper nuclear accelerator. This will be an accelerator looking for processes that contribute to the formation of atoms, nucleosynthesis. How are the elements on the periodic table, or some portion of them, created inside stars? This accelerator will operate at the energies of stars and shed some light on that.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for taking time and coming on to Innovation today, and I look forward to seeing you next month when we're out there for Neutrino Day.
Absolutely. Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you. Josh Wilhite is the project manager for the Long Base Neutrino Facility, and Jarrett Heiss is the science director for the Sanford Underground Research Facility. Thanks so much for being with us. And when we come back, we'll talk with Amy Elliott about a new collaboration with the Center for Health Outcomes and Prevention at Sanford.